I'm Doug McVeigh from the Prison Pipeline Collective. KBOO is not holding its annual spring pledge drive this month, yet we still need your support, so please go to the KBOO website right now at kboo.fm, click on the Donate Now button, and make your pledge. KBOO is a vital part of your life and of the community, amplifying the voices of people who are often underrepresented. KBOO informs, educates, and entertains. Your support makes all that possible. Please go to kboo.fm, click on the Donate Now button, and make your pledge. Thanks for your support.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood.
Produced at the studios of KBOO Radio in Portland, Oregon, this is Prison Pipeline. I'm Doug McVeigh. Prison Pipeline presents a unique perspective of the criminal justice system, addressing the root causes of crime and broadening understanding of the institution of incarceration. We seek to promote awareness and activism in order to foster a safe, healthy, and just society. The organization Penal Reform International recently released its report, Global Prison Trends 2020. With a summary of its report, here's PRI's Director of Policy and International Advocacy, Olivia Rope.
I want to start by echoing what the Assistant Secretary General and Dr. Kitty Pong mentioned around, you know, there's no doubt that prisons and justice systems are facing an overwhelming crisis today with coronavirus. And only with, you know, bold, coordinated international action do we think there is a chance to mitigate, not prevent, but mitigate the damage of this virus in prisons. However, as has been mentioned, you know, COVID-19 has really just lit the fuse on the ticking time bomb that is present in our criminal justice systems. So for instance, today in our report, you will read that rates of deaths in prisons are at crisis levels. The mortality rate for people in custody is as much as 50% higher than for people outside, and this means that your life is literally at greater risk when detained. Violence in places of detention is on the increase, with crisis responses triggering the use of riot squads, for example, which often turn out to be fatal. Or conversely, the authorities' blindness to systematic violence, to torture, ill treatment, which is a human rights crisis, and we document this in some detail in our report. And lastly, as mentioned, the simply, you know, crisis levels of overcrowding. As the Assistant Secretary General stated, prisons in over 100 countries operate above occupancy level, above their occupancy rates, and 22 operate above 200% of occupancy rates. So the spread of COVID-19 in such facilities is in effect a death sentence, and we have already seen some cases of this occurring already. I think the concerning thing with these crises that I've mentioned alongside many others that we have documented is that they are somewhat become, they have somewhat become the norm. They are the new normal, let's say. And in sharing, you know, some of these key findings today from our report, I think we need to reflect on why and how prisons have got to this point. And I will do this hopefully sharing some slides that everybody can see too. So of the 11 million people in prison globally, as mentioned, the majority are male adults. They usually make up 80% of convictions and 90% of those held in custody. And young male adults represent a significant proportion. We also see that the number of women although a minority, continues to rise in prison populations, with the global female prison population doubling over a 20-year time span. And while there have been some moves, thanks to the Bangkok rules, to improve conditions for women, our assessment in the report is that generally data and knowledge remains inadequate, and as does action to address the violence, poverty, and discrimination that's threaded through the stories of many of these women. For arguably the most vulnerable of all those detained children, the UN Global Study estimated at least 410,000 children are detained every year in prisons, and a further 1 million are held in police custody. These are very bleak numbers, and they show that, you know, while we have seen that some countries have successfully pursued child justice systems, the principle of using detention as a last resort for children is not yet a reality. Many are charged for offences that would not apply to adults, such as truancy or underage drinking. Pre-trial detention is too often the norm, not the exception. Over 3 million people await trials in jails, and 46 countries hold more people on remand assumed innocent than those convicted. And this shows, really, there's been very little progress towards lowering the proportion of pretrial detainees as set out in the indicator for Goal 16 of the SDGs. In fact, the recent data issued by World Prison Brief shows the exact opposite. Over the past 20 years, the number of pretrial detainees has grown by over 30%, which is faster than the growth in the general prison population. Our report also looks at, you know, the types of offences for people in prison, and it's clear that more costly and less effective prison sentences are also increasingly used for non-violent offences. So an estimated 50% or more of people that are sitting in prisons are there for non-violent offences. And analysis shows that prison is used as an automatic response to more and more crimes, and sentences are becoming longer, as will be discussed later. One of the starkest examples of this is with prohibition-based drug policies. Over 2 million people are in prison for drug offences, but the more telling statistic is that of those 2 million, 83% are there for drug possession for personal use. So we're seeing that countries that pursue harsh drug policies that target users and small-scale dealers or traffickers are not progressing to their proclaimed goal of achieving a drug-free world. Instead, they're targeting and sweeping up the poorest, the most vulnerable members of our society and marginalising them further. Our report this year also looks at how and why imprisonment continues to be a discriminatory cycle that is very difficult to break. Many countries report reoffending rates of above 50% among people released from their prisons. And the statistics rise even higher once post-release support wanes, so as the years kind of go on. Reducing recidivism is complex business, but there are some positives that we document in terms of the types of rehabilitation that's offered. For instance, our report looks at the promotion of sport from being a time killer for people in prison to an inherent aspect of crime prevention and rehabilitation. We also document how rehabilitation programs are increasingly designed to benefit wider society, with innovative projects popping up having sustainability, wildlife, and climate as the focus. This year, and this very much comes into light with the coronavirus pandemic, we've delved deeper into one of the core issues of many challenges, and that is funding. Whilst it was difficult to quantify the amount of money spent on prisons at a global level, not least because of transparency issues, there was some data available which allowed a comparative view across 54 countries. And our analysis found that, with a few exceptions, penitentiary systems generally receive low levels of funding, which is a grave indicator of lack of investment in creating effective justice systems. Government expenditure shows that across 54 countries, spending on prisons usually amounts to less than 0.3% of their GDP. There are huge variants in the amounts allocated per person per day in prison, as you can see on this map. And that's even if you take relative living costs. Staff and infrastructure appear to be the main cost for prisons, whereas food allocation is alarmingly low in some countries, totaling less than €1 per day per person. We see that where funding for prisons is increased, mostly these funds are earmarked to build or expand prison estates to contain growing populations. And one of the most serious impacts of under-resourcing that we document in our report is to do with prison healthcare. Prison healthcare has been dangerously inadequate in many countries and for many years. And this results in an acute shortage of healthcare staff. One example in our report shows in one African country, there are as few as 2 doctors for 46 prisons holding some 15,000 people. And while not as extreme, in Europe too, there is evidence of shortages of prison healthcare staff as in other mid to high income countries. So even before COVID-19, this was a problem, but with coronavirus, we see a lack of equipment provision, and even on a basic level, let alone enough healthcare staff to advise prison administrations and assess risk or respond to cases. So where to next? Well, first, I think it's important to remember that behind all of our data and behind all of the statistics are people. We're at a point where never before have there been this many people in prison. And as our report shows, there is some positive work going on in some corners, but generally there is a need to rethink prisons, the use of them and the implementation of sentences. Prisons are simply targeting the marginalised, holding people back and causing human rights violations daily. So whilst immediate steps, as we have been discussing, are our focus, as we face the consequences of coronavirus, we need to think about the crisis that has existed for a long time. And in the special focus chapter this year, we do look at imprisonment alternatives as a solution to this. So the release of prisoners and the use of alternatives we have seen to dramatically reduce prison populations are unprecedented measures in unprecedented times, but these should not be temporary. And we need to move towards a system that can provide safe and rehabilitative focused prisons, which is simply impossible when they're bursting at the seams.
That was Olivia Rope, Director of Policy and International Advocacy for Penal Reform International. She was discussing PRI's new report, Global Prison Trends 2020. You're listening to Prison Pipeline. I'm Doug McVeigh.
I'm feeling sick and bad. My head is hurting too. Go get the doctor so he can tell me just what to do, because I keep on aching. Yes, I ache both night and day. Yeah, doctor, doctor, please drive this old pneumonia away.
Now, here's Joel Hernandez-Garcia, President of the Inter-American Commission on Human Rights.
Thank you very much, dear friends and colleagues. And on behalf of the Inter-American Commission on Human Rights, we are delighted to participate in the launching of the Global Prisons Trend Report for this year. And we are very grateful to Penal Reform Institute and Thailand Institute of Justice for producing this report and for inviting us to share with you the experience in the Americas. And as it has already been said, one of the biggest challenges that the Americans have faced for many years is the problem of pretrial detention. On the other side, we also are facing enormous challenges in order to move states to adopt alternative measures to imprisonment. These are the two areas of our work during the years. And I have to say, with very little success so far. The numbers are big. The report presents the global numbers, but they represent very much what is happening in the Americas, and our colleagues have already presented the basic information. Just to give you some figures in order to illustrate the size of the problem, the general average of people in pretrial detention is about 40% in our region, which is probably higher than the global average of people in pretrial detention in the world. However, that is only the average, because in some countries, the number of people in pretrial detention is really very worrisome. In Bolivia, for instance, 83% of the detainees are in pretrial detention. In Paraguay, 72.5%. In Haiti, 71%. And in Venezuela, 67%. Just to give you the five countries with the highest number of people in pretrial detention. And this is runs against the principle of assumption of innocence. It's a gross violation of a fundamental human right. So what has the commission been promoting? I can explain the work of the commission in two areas. First, we have to work in order to correct the excessive use of pretrial detention. And second, we have to promote alternatives to detention. And we are facing challenges in order to promote these two goals. Let me go a little bit in detail. With regard to the eradication of the excessive use of pretrial detention, the commission has promoted the standards on which pretrial detention must be applied. Basically, pretrial detention must follow four principles: exceptionality, legality, necessity, proportionality, and reasonableness. All these four would mean that a person would be put in prison just as a way of an exception. The pretrial detention cannot amount to the penalty itself when someone has not been trialed and therefore put in prison. At the same time, there must be legitimate grounds for pretrial detention, which are based on two principles: danger of flight and the risk of obstruction of justice. These are, for the Inter-American Commission, the only two conditions where detention is legitimate. Now, we also have been working with member states of the Organization of American States to guarantee the independence of judicial officers, which is a key component in order to make the principle of presumption of innocence possible. We also have been working with the strengthening of public defenders, because those are, in our countries, the attorneys who represent prisoners, in order to seek for alternative measures. As it happens over the world, inmates suffer of poverty and they cannot afford a private lawyer. So it is very important to strengthen in public defender services. Now, as far as the second point, the alternatives to pretrial detention. For the Commission, alternative measures are considered measures of options of a procedural nature that allow the accused to be in freedom during criminal proceedings. And the following are examples of alternative measures. One, a promise to submit to the proceedings and not to obstruct the investigation made by the prisoner before a judicial authority. A second measure should be periodic presentation before a judicial authority or a designated authority. That is also in place in some countries where people are released on bail and under the obligation to make periodic presentations. Third, the subjection to the care or supervision of a given person or institution. Fourth, the prohibition on leaving a given area without authorization. That in many cases include the retention of passports in order to avoid the fight of inmates. The fifth, immediate separation from domicile in cases of domestic violence. And this is an important measure, especially in time of COVID-19, because another problem that has been arising within the pandemia is an increased level of gender violence. So the countries must also look for ways of putting someone out of prison, but also in a different domicile in case where there was domestic violence. Another alternative measure is a bail bond, a house arrest, which is also recommended, electronic monitoring mechanisms in criminal matters, restorative justice programs, and measures to expedite proceedings. The focus of the region has been on the and more intensive use of electronic monitoring mechanism. However, there are advantages and disadvantages of this measure. One that has limited the use of electronic monitoring is the cost of such devices, especially in those countries where the cost has to be paid by the inmate. As far as the measures to expedite proceedings, that also has been brought with the presentation of the Assistant Secretary General. It's very important that in terms of pandemia, prisoners have the right to access justice. And in some of these situations, to adopt also measures to expedite proceedings. There is a large experience in that in the region, in the countries that we've been working with. For instance, Bolivia has implemented a system of judicial visits to the prison in order to expedite those prisoners in place. Another good practice that we have observed in the region is that established in Brazil, which they have implemented a system of custodial hearings. So detainees are brought before a judge, even before the detention order is issued, in order to confirm the viability of pretrial detention. Now, there are challenges, big challenges, in order to achieve these two goals. First, the list of incarcerable crimes in criminal codes has increased in the region. And instead of reducing the number of crimes who who required pre-trial detention. On the contrary, we have observed an increase of those incarcerable crimes. And this has had, as a result, of course, the increase in the pretrial detention numbers that I explained before. Second, we have also observed in some circumstances the political use of pretrial detention. Just to give you an example, Nicaragua, in the Code of Criminal Procedure of Nicaragua, Article 173, Section C, provides for the detention in cases of actions against constitutional order. And there is no such a crime as acts of constitutional order in the criminal code. So during the social protest, which started 2 years ago, around 800 people were put in pretrial detention, just a measure of repression and retaliation against people who participated in social protests.
President Hernandez Garcia, I'll need you to conclude.
Yes. Thank Finally, you. And two other challenges that we have facing is our disciplinary actions against judges who issue pretrial, who issue alternative measures. And finally, the role of the media. It's very important for the media to transmit accurate messages on the extent of pretrial detention and the use of alternative measures. I conclude with that.
That was Joel Hernandez Garcia, president of the Inter-American Commission on Human Rights. He was speaking at the launch of PRI's report, Global Prison Trends 2020. And for now, that's it. Thank you for joining us. I'm Doug McVeigh, and you have been listening to Prison Pipeline. Find this and other installments of Prison Pipeline on the web at kboo.fm/prisonpipeline. You'll also find links there to subscribe to the Prison Pipeline podcast. Prison Pipeline has a Facebook page. It's at facebook.com/prisonpipeline. Please give its page a like and share it with friends. Many thanks to our engineer, and a heartfelt thanks to you, dear listener, for joining us. You make it all worth it. Join us again next week for another edition of Prison Pipeline. For now, this is Doug McVeigh saying so long.
Sometimes I find myself alone, regretting some little foolish thing, some simple thing that I've done. Though I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood. I try so hard, so please don't let me be.
I'm Doug McVeigh from the Prison Pipeline Collective. KBOO's not holding its annual spring pledge drive this month, yet we still need your support, so please go to the KBOO website right now at kboo.fm, click on the donate button, and make your pledge. KBOO is a vital part of your life and of the community, amplifying the voices of people who are often underrepresented. KBOO informs, educates, and entertains. Your support makes all that possible. Please go to kboo.fm, click on the Donate Now button, and make your pledge. And thanks for your support.